Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest is Max Steyer, President and CEO of the Partnership for Public Service.
So, Max, you mentioned earlier, and that was a wonderful sort of tee up of the transition aspects of the Ready to Govern. And you just alluded to another, the relationship with Congress and doing some reforms. And I'd like to sort of delve deeper into what Congress has done to date to make this, to reduce the barriers, to make communication possible, to help with the transition. What kind of resources have they provided, meaning Congress, and what more needs to be done according to, the Ready to Govern initiative?
Right. So I mentioned that, there's a really important piece of legislation that was passed in 2010. The most important aspect of that was moving the date of transition support. The kind of support that the transition teams get are the very basics that you need. So it's office space, computers. And the, the fascinating thing is this is a security necessity too when you think about it. The transition activity is done by private individuals. There's no presidential library that has transition documents. It really is fascinating because they're not government documents. And likewise, the systems that they're using to communicate about sensitive things don't have the protections that you would if you were part of the government architecture. So even the communications and the computer systems and all that is so important. We hope this next cycle that that'll include even around the HR software activity because, again, you're trying to staff the government as a private organization in transition work. And then you move into the White House and you're actually staffing the government through government resources. You need a seamless transfer of activity. And that's something that, again, more could be done on and ought to be done on. There's also been some, in my view, not enough support for the transition orientation activity to occur. Right now, it's been limited to the first term. And the truth is, of a president, the truth is that a transition occurs even if a president's reelected.
That's right.
And most people don't realize it. When I say most people, the presidents don't realize it, and they don't do the work that's actually necessary to make it a successful transition. And we, our proposal would enable that resourcing to occur across the full sweep of an administration, first and second term. Two other things. Well, one other piece of legislation was passed sort of central to this endeavor, and one's now in process. The one that's been passed was a piece of legislation that reduced the number of Senate-confirmed positions by about 10%. And my own view is that there's a lot more that could be done. 10% is a good thing, but there are many more positions that, frankly, don't need to be Senate-confirmed. And the importance here is that, the process has become so awful, so long, so ugly to get through Senate confirmation that people are not in place. And that means that both great talent is being chased away, but ultimately these jobs go unfilled. And again, the CFOs are a great example of that. They were originally proposed on the list to be taken off of Senate confirmation. And there was a pushback saying, oh, they're too important. We'll do an expedited Senate confirmation process. It doesn't work. And that means that like over half or some huge number of the CFO positions are vacant in government, which is just craziness. So getting rid of 10% was great. We would like to see more, but that was an improvement. And then the most recent piece of legislation on this topic was passed, as I mentioned earlier, by Senators Johnson and Carper. And it would largely try to systematize the outgoing process in the way that the first piece of legislation was focused on the incoming process. It requires the creation 6 months before the election of a council of executives, career executives from all the agencies, creates a second council around the political leadership, creates one point of contact from the government, from GSA to be the transition coordinator. And I should say GSA is so, so important in this process and has done a really strong, strong job. But in any event, that's passed through the Homeland Security Government Affairs Committee in the Senate, now needs to get to the floor and then obviously then pass, and then the House has to approve it as well in order for it to become law. But, that's something that is our top priority in the transition space. I would love to see, some more work done around reducing the number of Senate-confirmed positions. There's some interesting work being done about simplifying the forms, but there's a lot that could be done that would make this process better, that would benefit everyone, that's not partisan, that doesn't cost money. It's just smart, governance, and we should get it done.
Reaching out to the Hill and making these reforms possible is essential. to this Ready to Govern initiative, but also connecting with the presidential candidates.
Yes.
How would you give me a sense of how you're doing this both informally and formally, getting the Ready to Govern idea, vision, strategy out there for them to take heed?
Yeah. So it is one of the challenges. And obviously, there are a lot of candidates out there.
Yes.
Understandably, this is not on most people's radar screens of the candidates, but it ought to be. I mean, and it should be on the public's radar screen. I mean, part of our goal is to get the public to start asking these questions and certainly the media. You know, frankly, our perspective is judge the candidates on what they say they will do and judge them on what they're doing to prepare to get done the things that they say they will do. I mean, how will they manage government? You know, and the first management exercise they have is really the transition process, the first and fundamental one that sets a stage for everything else. So we have a long ways to go in order to, you know, to get this to sink into the public consciousness. But to your direct question, it's all about relationships. So, you know, it's about finding people who are affiliated with campaigns and making sure they understand the resources that can be available to them, the need for them to focus on this. And, you know, our past record has been good by finding, you know, good people and reaching out to them. Now, I will say we are also blessed with a phenomenal advisory committee that have lots of relationships too, and it includes people like Josh Bolton, you know, President Bush's former chief of staff, and, you know, Mike Leavitt, who ran the Romney transition, and Ted Kaufman, who was Biden's chief of staff and very active in the legislation I mentioned earlier, Clay Johnson, who ran the Bush, you know, transition. Just making sure I've covered my folks here, Donna Shalala, who is, you know, just one of the wisest people I know on this stuff. So, I mean, and, you know, we want to grow that circle so that we are able to, you know, to reach the people we need to reach. But there's a strong value proposition for them if we can get to them, and that is, we're going to help them. We're going to help them do this right, and it will mean that if they win, they will be able to govern in a much, much more effective fashion.
And to do that, I mean, you alluded to it earlier. So you see, they win, they're getting ready to govern. You got to appoint people.
Right.
And so I'd like to talk about the appointment process, but more particularly, how do you make the presidential appointee successful? And what are some of the challenges or barriers to doing that?
Well, so two buckets there, right? So the picking piece and then the success piece, which are different. And I mean, obviously, picking the right people is a starting point, and one hopes that there'll be increased focus on the management capabilities of the appointees who have substantial management responsibilities, and there are a lot of those. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, you see lots of people being put in jobs for which, frankly, I think they're not qualified because they don't have the management experience necessary to succeed. They can be very smart, they can be very capable, and they might ultimately learn, but that's not good enough. I mean, I think the bar should be higher and the stakes are higher. I mean, it's incredibly important what these people do, and the jobs are hard. So, you know, really understanding which jobs require substantial management experience, what kind of management experience, and making sure that those folks that you're selecting have it is critical. And Congress can play a big role there too in the kinds of questions they ask through the Senate confirmation process. On the preparation side, you know, to my mind, you don't have the time to teach people the management and leadership skills that they need to succeed. That's something that if they're not coming to the job with that in their portfolio, then they've been picked wrongly. Mm-hmm. Now look, at more junior levels, You can find people who have capabilities that can be grown over time, you know, in the government. And we should see more investment, not only of the career employees, but also the political employees in government. But what I think you can do and ought to do is, again, fill the gap between, you know, whatever, you know, sets of experiences the appointees have had from their prior private sector experience or even some public sector experience and what they really need to understand about the federal environment. And as I mentioned earlier, this is an information transfer exercise around a set of topics that people mess up on all the time. The number one, which I didn't mention earlier, is managing the political career interface. Mm-hmm. So you have 4,000 political appointees who, in essence, sit on top of 2 million career civil servants. And in my view, again, it's way too many political appointees. But what many come in thinking is that they can recreate a command and control system with their fellow political appointees and not ultimately get buy-in from the career employees. And that's a giant mistake. So part of it is helping the appointees understand that their success depends upon their effectively engaging the career workforce, getting their buy-in, working with them well, and making them part of the team. And that's something that a lot of people eventually learn too late, after they've messed up, after they've not gotten stuff done, and where there's a lot of cleanup, and when they've run so much time off the clock that they're, you know, very, very diminished in their abilities to be effective. So that's a big piece. But there, again, a set of topics that are really important. And in addition to that knowledge transfer, I really think that a lot of the long-term success of our government will depend on its ability to move to a more of a full government enterprise approach to what it does. And I'm a big talent person again, and so I think that comes from having people in the leadership positions who see their jobs as connected to a larger objective, not just to their organization's objective, and that they have relationships across the federal government that enable them to work effectively with different organizations to achieve those shared goals.
What is the Ready to Govern initiative doing to put management at the forefront of the next administration's agenda? We will ask Max Steyer from the Partnership for Public Service and Chuck Pro from IBM, who will be joining us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.